Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Nikki Maduro Show. I'm Kim McAllister in for Nikki today. Of course, Nikki's daughter in the hospital, and she's probably going to be there until, I want to say, Thursday. Hopefully, maybe they'll get her out a little sooner, but we are sending our love and our thoughts for a quick recovery to Nikki and her daughter, Marley, who is 13 and in the hospital with Crohn's disease. And hopefully Nikki will be able to check in from the hospital, give us an update, tell us how things are going, and talk to us a little bit today on the Nikki Maduro Show. I have former KGO talk show host Maureen Langan set to join us in a little while. And Jeff Machado. I used to work with Jeff in Sacramento at a station called Quad 106.5. Jeff has taken his radio career and he's really thought about what makes him happy. And he's decided it is voice acting and also stage acting. So we'll talk to Jeff during Nikki's segment about why you do what you do, what makes you love it. Those are a couple things that are on the way up here on the Nikki Maduro Show. Do want to open the show by starting to remember the reason that we are able to do this, which is not only your donations, but the founding sponsor, Steve Moskowitz, tax attorney Steve Moskowitz at 888-TAX-DEAL@MoskowitzLLP.com. Already I've heard from Steve today that he's saving people money and getting people grants for, or not grants, but money given from the government with the federal ERC program. So we'll hopefully hear from Steve a little bit later as well. Again, Steve is at 888-TAX-DEAL and MoskowitzLLP.com. If you like what you're seeing and hearing on the show, you can kick in to the program as well. And of course, we need all the helps we can get, all the helps we can get. First of all, you can click the thumbs up button, click the like button on YouTube. That really helps us out. But also, if you check out the website, it is thenickimadoroshow.com. And there's a Patreon button on there, and that will help us as well. So thank you for checking it out. Super Chat also live here on the YouTube show today. And we are very grateful for any help we can get. That is for sure. One thing I wanted to talk to you about today was this San Francisco reparations story. Not sure if you saw this, but there is a task force on reparations, not only statewide in California, but citywide in San Francisco. And here is what they are recommending the city of San Francisco do. I would love to hear your opinion on this in the chat. And I'd like to keep it respectful and not racist. So let's just, you know, set that bar high as we go into the story. The city of San Francisco is recommending, the task force rather, is recommending that the city of San Francisco make a one-time payment of $5 million to each eligible Black resident. The San Francisco African American Reparations Advisory Committee saying this lump sum would compensate for what they say is decades of harm experienced as a result of both intentional decisions and unintended harms perpetuated by city policy. The proposed redress, they say, could cost San Francisco $50 billion to give $5 million to each Black person that qualifies. And I'm not sure what the rules are, how you would go about qualifying for that. The city's total budget in 2023 is $14 billion. This could cost $50 billion. And so my question to you really is it worth doing this to possibly put the city of San Francisco in debt? Or is it something you think that we can't afford not to do to ease and try to repair race relations in San Francisco? So please weigh in. I'm going to bring Maureen Langan in right now because I can see you. I see you joining me in there. Hi, Maureen Langan. How are you?
Hello, the lovely Kim McAllister. Hey. How are you?
Good. I miss you so much.
Oh my God, you're the best. You are the, I miss your great energy, your brilliance, all of it.
Are you in New York or California today?
Well, to this week I'm in California. Okay. Then I'm back in New York, then I'm back here. I'm all over the place.
So yeah, you, I'm always jealous when I see the pictures you post of New York because I've never been there. And so, no, I would love to come visit you and hang out and go see a show and do all the fun stuff.
Well, I'll guide you when you come next time. You know, I was listening to your topic. Can I comment on it?
Please. Yes. Bring it on.
You know what it is? you know, we all talk about reparations of some sort, and that is a lovely idea. But when they don't, when you don't know the qualifications, that's an important thing. You know, just to like, you know, you have school forgiveness, right? The loan forgiveness, who qualifies? They're not the same thing, of course. But you know what really interesting to me is investing in, sounds like such a term, investing in communities. What does that mean? What about areas that have so much discrimination because, you know, they put highways through usually Black neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. They, you know, the businesses, real estate, you know, when I was-
The gas refinery and the power plant and the toxic chemicals spewing, you know, factories are all there. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm going to put you on my earbuds here. It's interesting because I know I used to sell real estate for like 3 minutes when I was in graduate school, and I hated every second of it. I was like, oh, this is a nightmare.
Okay. We're in the earbuds. So it was true. If a person of color moved into a white neighborhood, the real estate went down just the way it is. It is. So I think investing in communities, because how do you pick individual people? But then moving forward, people can get what that called that generational wealth, and that's owning a business or owning a small home. So I think that seems to, moving forward, it seems to invest in people who are already there instead of who going back and trying to figure out who gets this or doesn't get it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. John Slade says, I don't think reparations for slavery should be paid. I think if reparations are to be paid, it could be paid for Jim Crow laws and systemic racism and corporate racism.
But how do you do that? What does that look like since people don't want affirmative action anymore? What does that look like?
Ricky O'Bear says reparations are overdue. Eligible is the key word. Write the checks. Mm. What I wonder is it too late? Are we too far from it? You know, I mean, at this point, I know people are still hurting, and people are still hurting because of racism. They're not, you know, I was talking yesterday to Brian Copeland about redlining, and about even people in the Bay Area, they'll have an African-American person will have an appraiser come out to the house, and and the house appraises, you know, for one price, and then they do a test, and they take down all the pictures of Black family members and anything related to Black culture, and they get a white person in there and pretend it's a white person's house. And Brian was saying yesterday, this house in Marin appraised for $400,000 more just based on the fact that it was a white person that lived in it instead of a Black person that lived in it. So so people are still financially being hit by racism. And I don't think it's something we can deny. But when you talk about reparations, like, is it worth putting a city or a state into debt, more debt, because of something that happened so long ago?
Well, that's why my point is moving forward, because it's the here and now, and you can't. I mean, it's not like I'm not sensitive to that, but I was painfully listening to Sarah Huckabee. Today, it was painful, but sometimes I like to torture myself. And she was saying, you know, we're not going to teach our kids that we're racist and evil. Well, we're not evil, but why can't you look like, if there were a problem in your family and you wanted to move ahead in your own individual family, you would confront it, right? If you could, and you would try to hear each other and move forward. And for her to say, to teach children racism, well, why wouldn't you teach them that we didn't have anti-lynching laws until recently? Why wouldn't you teach them about redlining and decimating areas or Black Wall Street? Why wouldn't you teach them that? What happened to runaway slaves and even sports, when Black people were, you know, in certain areas like early in football, when they would dominate, then they changed the laws that they can't get into sports in certain fields. I mean, there's a lot. I read the book a long time ago. So why wouldn't we teach that? I don't understand why we wouldn't.
There's no reason not to teach that and not to face it head on. But I just think when you're talking about we're talking about all the things still going on, right? All the ways people are still being hurt and impacted by racism. And it seems like no matter how much money we try to give people, unless we fix the problem first, they're still going to be economically impacted by things like not being able to get a home loan or a business loan, or not being able to buy milk and fruit in their own neighborhoods or whatever it may be. Yeah. So how do we go about fixing that? Is that too insurmountable to fix? So we just throw more money at it?
Well, you know, you're talking about California wanting to make reparations in the San Francisco area, right? Specifically mm-hmm. to San Francisco.
Well, there's a state reparations task force underway. This one mm-hmm. is the city of San Francisco task force. Mm-hmm. Task force. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine. She's a performer, director, writer, and she had been on my podcast. And she said to me, you know, Maureen, I'm so tired of people. She's a woman. She's a Black woman. I am so tired of people saying, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Black people have to pull themselves. Well, when we do, get cut them off, like mm-hmm. Black Wall Street. So stop telling us to pull ourselves up if you're going to keep cutting them off. Not much different than Ruth Bader Ginsburg saying, you know, women don't want, just don't put your knees on our necks. Have that opportunity. But, you know, you look at who's voting in Congress today. You look at the makeup of the people in the party, there's very little diversity. And you look at Reconstruction when, according to white America, a disproportionate number of Black men were getting into Congress, and all of a sudden the laws are changed. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, we're putting women back in, you know, when we're gonna be reading back about women having forced births in America. You know, we're gonna look back, and are we gonna teach that? I don't know.
Nick says, no amount of money can make up for the damage done to the Black community through slavery and racism. Not saying do nothing, but blowing up a city budget is the wrong kind of help. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I guess I can see it both ways. If you told me, and I found it to be true, and it was true, that giving everyone that qualifies, you know, for the reparations, $5 million would ease racial tensions and, if not completely eliminate, mm-hmm. you know, the racial divide in the city of San Francisco, but nearly make it go away, then I might say it's worth it.
Well, I don't think the money is going to make it go away. Not that I'm saying there shouldn't.
That's the problem.
I mean, it's not going to make it go away.
What's it gonna fix?
People don't think there's a problem. Yeah. And they get so defensive instead of just hearing what other people's point of view is.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I completely agree with you, Maureen Langan. So we go right into it, but I just wanted to say hi to you and ask what you're doing, because I know you've got shows all over the place, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to promote things before I throw another story at you.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, I'm performing, as you say, in a lot of different places, and people can go to Maureen Langan, LANGAN.com. My comedy special came out. It's a dry bar comedy. They are international, and it streams. So it's called Don't Make Me Hate You. See the shirt over my shoulder. You also see Rosa Parks in the background, too. I don't know if you can see her. That's the little doll back there. but yeah, so I'm all over the place, and from California to New York. The dry bar special is called Don't Make Me Hate You. There's some chat about America's Got Talent in the spring. We'll see what happens there. You know, we'll see. Little chats going on.
Like as a contestant?
Yeah. Not. We'll see. Well, I'm not saying that. I don't know. So, you know, I'm going to be in Atlantic City. I mean, not Atlantic. I'm going to be in Las Vegas in April at the Tropicana at the Laugh Factory. So people just follow me. You know, that's what we have to do. You know, I was a journalist for many years before I was a comedian.
Yes.
So a lot of people don't know that, like certain radio stations that I worked at would be like, oh, she's just a comedian. Comedians aren't good on air because you do all the research and then you have a sense of humor about life and you don't take yourself, I'm so serious. I am the smartest person. You know, I remember when I had to do the Mueller report came out. Do you mind me telling you the dirt? When the Mueller report came out, the program director slipped me notes about how to address it. I said, I don't need your notes. Yeah, like as if I'm like, don't know how, because that lady on Sunday nights, you know, I had followed it so immensely. And when it came out that morning, I had highlighted every bit as it was coming live. I don't need your little notes. So, but then you know how you go 3 hours on the topic and then you're like, oh my God, I want to jump off a bridge. I, at the last half hour, the lovely Karen Reed was in the, you know, the control room and a couple of other producers, and we were all women. I said, all right, you guys, I'm like so bored with this right now. I mean, we just talked about it for 2.5 out of the 3 hours. Let's talk about who do you think was the hottest prosecutor? Who do we think was the hottest? And people's heads explode who are like running things. You know what I mean? I love doing that. They think, you know, whatever.
So you had already left KGO by the time the station imploded on itself. I wonder, you were looking at this whole thing from afar. What were you thinking when you saw that, the headlines and that happened?
Well, it was just heartbreaking because I knew so many friends and people that I adored were out of a job just like that. Yep. Not only that, just an end of an era where talk radio is so important. It's such a part of the community, KGO. I had a Sunday night show that I loved and I did for 7 years. And, you know, there's different program directors that would come and go. And there were those who were like, we want a developer. You know, they liked the mix. They knew who I was. There was a lot of fill-in. But then I remember the last program director said, I assume you want a Monday through Friday job, which I didn't. And I said, well, I wouldn't assume that. And he goes, why? I said, because you're like an abusive boyfriend collectively, and you keep telling me things are going to get better, and they never get better. I think they get surprised that I speak that freely. And I said, I just like my little Sunday night in the corner. And I do. I miss the people. I always try to make it a mix of fun, heart, smart. So you'd come out with a political issue like we're talking about. You might have some interesting people from the community. I had asked the producer, let's get a curler because the Olympics were on.
Oh, I love the curling and the pants. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I wanted to talk about it. Of course, I make fun of it because it's a Swiffer commercial. But I wanted to, and I'm thinking I feel like I could be pretty excellent at that sport, as well as playing the triangle. I feel like those would be things that I could be naturally good at. But I also wanted to show respect and go, really, what is this? Because people do tease about it. Show me what this is. Tell me why it's a sport. Tell me the strategy. It's bocce ball on ice with a broom. What is this? And my producer said, please get me a curler. When I show up, there's a hurler.
No, no, no.
A hurler with a stick.
That's different, right? That's different.
That's different. It's like field hockey of some sort. I don't know. But I had the best time with the hurler. And there's women hurling. And he brought some. I miss that kind of stuff. But when I heard that all of you were just gone, I'm glad you're doing something like this. There's such value in it. But, you know, it's like being a light bulb once electricity has been invented in terms of what's going on. Even being a performer, I can go into a theater, 1,200 seats, 100 seats, doesn't matter. But one video can see 80 skillion people can see that. Like my Dry Bar special collectively between Facebook and Instagram, the clips was the most watched of 2022. So the top 10 most watched of 2022, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people see that.
Yeah.
You know, I go to a club, but I love working the clubs. And by the way, Monday night, the 23rd, I'm going to be at the Marsh retooling my solo show, Daughter of a Garbage Man.
Oh, great.
Yeah. That was a very deep, serious show with a lot of humor. I'm taking all the depth out of it because people, it's a different market. You can go and showcase it and perform it in different places if it's a lighter, fun show. It's still the funny. It still has depth. But also, too, post-pandemic, I just think people don't want to really go into the pain of life and the strength and the struggle. Well, strength, but not struggles. I think we want to kind of go, oh, good message. It's a good message about political correctness today and how my father, born in 1937, you can never pull him into 2023. So do we erase a person like that? Is it a crime to be a person of your time? Can you teach, you know, it's like trying to get him to be politically correct is like trying to, for me, translating Aramaic to Gaelic, you know, there's only, so, and my mother, the Irish woman, what the hell is wrong, which, you know, it's fun. So I'm workshopping some of that if people want to come out Monday night to the Marsh in San Francisco.
Has your family seen the show? Has your mom and dad seen the show?
No. My mother knew what it was about. I said, because it was, you know, deep, the first one. And it talked about, you know, my father could be, you know, violent and, you know, so, but not, it wasn't pitiful. It was about your strengths, your struggles, your weaknesses of a family and how you come through that. So she had read the script and when she found out it was one person show, oh, Jesus, well, I didn't know that. I thought you were writing a book. I said, a book? I told you I'm performing it. Well, I go, so a book? That would, because she, I think she was a little embarrassed. I said, so a book? That's okay? Like, it could be in a library forever, but a solo show? Well, they just didn't know. So, all right, well.
All right. So when are you going to be at the Marsh doing that?
Monday night, the 23rd, just workshopping the first, you know, it's a great place to workshop material.
Very good.
And it really poses the question about political correctness. What can you say on the page? What can you say on the stage? Do I have to change who my father is so you're more comfortable? Can I actually say the things he says? Like, do I want to erase humanity, even though people can say crazy crap, but their intent. So anyway, it's just going back in that world.
And people can be products of their upbringing and their time frame and not be bad people. They just don't understand the world the way someone born, you know, in my daughter's age, 13 years ago, would understand the world. We have different views of what's politically correct, of what's acceptable, of what's polite, and things change. But that doesn't mean that he's any less valuable of a person.
Well, you know, he would say a couple things. Like he says to me, I'm using his Bronx voice. He'll say something like, oh, I can't be hungry anymore. I supposedly, if you're hungry, you have food insecurity. You have people afraid of bananas. What are you talking about insecure? He goes, if I'm hungry, say I'm hungry. I go, Dad, food insecurity means people don't have enough food or enough quality food to sustain basic need. That's what I said, hungry.
They don't know where their next meal's coming from. That's why they're insecure about food,
But he's like, that's called hungry. So it's like, what? And then I remember when, you know, the trans swimmer, the woman who was swimming, the transgender woman, he said to my mother, they're watching television, and he goes, I don't understand. What's the big fuss of this woman swimming? I don't get it. She says, well, Huey, you understand. She used to be a man, and then she went through a transition, and now I don't know what the hell you're talking about. What? Like, he just was like, and of course, like, I, you know, being in San Francisco or being in New York City, it's not a strange concept. But to a man born in 1930, he wasn't putting it down. He's just like, what the hell are you talking about? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they don't get it.
So this is who I bring forth in my show, Daughter of a Garbage Man.
That's so funny. All right, so I want to, I saw this story and I can't wait to get your reaction. This story, the headline was, the popular baby names today that will sound absolutely ridiculous in 10 years. So let's get Maureen Langan's opinion. The first one is Khaleesi. Now, this is from the Game of Thrones. The queen, the blonde Khaleesi. Queen's name's Khaleesi.
Okay.
But it's definitely a Game of Thrones name. And I mean, I don't know how much the Game of Thrones is going to withstand for a baby name in the next 10 years.
Well, it doesn't sound as bad as it looks in spelling. you know what I mean? Khaleesi. The KH is going to throw people. You know, when people get fancy with spelling their names differently.
Sure.
But I could think Lisi. I didn't know if it was a man or a woman's name because I don't watch Games of Thrones because I don't like violence.
Yeah,
but,
it's very violent. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't watch that. But I could see some nickname Lisi. What's your name? It's Khaleesi. I don't know. I don't think that's going to be. Well, I don't hate it.
I don't hate this one. I know a guy named Blue.
No, a dog can be Blue. I know there's a girl named Sue, a boy named Sue, whatever. Not Blue. No.
No, Blue's not doing it for you?
No. A middle name, maybe. Doesn't somebody have a middle name?
Blue?
John Travolta's kids. One of his kids.
Has Jet Blue? Bluest. I don't know.
A Jet Blue.
Zayden.
Very good. No, I don't. But I don't think it's going to be weird down the road, Zayden. Because there's Hayden and Jaden.
I think that'll stand the test of time. I think that's all right. Yeah. Okay.
No.
I don't know how to even say this one. Is it Neve or Nevaeh?
No, I don't know. But I need to buy a consonant for this word. N-E-V-A-H. But you know.
Is it Irish?
No. Neve is, but it's spelled very differently. It sounds, Neve is, that's not Neve. That's Nevaeh. That's like Nevaeh.
Oh, you know what it is? It's heaven spelled backwards. That's what it is.
Oh, well, I'm just, okay, I can't. No, that's too much for me.
Creed.
Apollo?
It's a first name.
No, I know. No, I feel like we're on a game show. I can't. North, no. I can't. No, I just can't.
I think this next one's kind of a bit of a stripper name. Destiny.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's already a name that's out and about.
Yeah.
You haven't met Destiny. Here we go. Another dog's name. Let's go.
Benji. This one, I think, will stand the test of time. This is pronounced Siobhan, right?
Yes. Yep. Oh, it already has.
So, you know, I think for Americans that they say Siobhan, but that's, you know, that's just because you have to figure out how to pronounce it right. And then lastly, it's Danger.
No, that's not happening. Neave in Irish is spelled, I had to look it up, N-I-A-M-H. Nobody would know
that. Oh, that's right. It's the one that looks like Neum with an H at the end, but it's Neave.
Neave. But it means bright or radiant. But my mother's from Ireland, so these names are spelled differently. I get that.
Yeah.
No, Danger's out. Danger's out.
Danger for us, huh?
Somebody comes up to you, you're going to date, let your daughter... your daughter, your beautiful daughter, and your handsome son, your daughter starts dating, and a guy comes in and will hopefully shake your hand and look you in the eye. He goes, "Hi, my name is Danger." You're letting your daughter out with him?
No, you're not letting your daughter get on the back of Danger's motorcycle.
No, that ain't happening.
I am not done with you yet, Maureen Langan. Can I put you on in the waiting room for just a minute while I check in with my sponsor? Okay, thank you so much. I'm going to bring in tax attorney Steve Moskowitz, everybody. Yay!
Hi, Kim. I didn't imagine Danger pulling up on a motorcycle. I imagined him pulling up on his windowless van to take your daughter.
Oh, no. We don't want either one of those happening.
Yeah, they're both bad.
No. Mm-mm. You look nice today in your stripy shirt.
Thank you.
And you're already saving people money. You're getting it done.
Yes. And, you know, just today with more ERC, I see the difference. I had two clients that retained us today for ERC. And one was so easy. And this is one I talked about the other day, just like him. This client qualified on the gross revenue test. It's so easy. It's just math. It looked at the numbers, boom, you qualified. That was it. Nothing to talk about, figure out, well, this or that, get back to me with this. And I'm thinking, just like we talked about in another case, it's just so easy when they qualify on the gross revenue test. But the problem is the firms that only want to take the easy cases and they turn everybody else away. Well, the problem with that, if they said, look, they don't have the wherewithal to do it, but there's another way, talk to somebody else, fine. But they say you don't qualify.
Yeah.
And I had another case today where the CPA turned somebody away. No. He didn't have the drop in gross revenue, but he qualified on the alternative ground. And that is such a big deal because the government is giving away up to $26,000 for every employee that you have that qualifies in 2020 and 2021. Well, and we do the easy test first. And believe me, if you qualify under the easy test, we'll go that way. But so many people don't qualify under the drop in revenue test, but they do qualify on the other test. And it's just doing the two back to back today, like I did the other day, it's such a difference because the one is just so, you know, I was talking a couple of minutes, that's it, you qualify, boom, nothing to talk about. Whereas the other one, well, let me see about this, what about this, what about this, what about this, get back to me with that. And the bottom line is, we don't care how much work we have to do. As long as you legally qualify, let's get every dollar to which you're legally entitled.
Absolutely. Who wouldn't want every dollar to which they could get, you know?
Well, the clients want it, but the problem is a lot of the firms don't want to be bothered. They just want to do them quick, you know, McDonald's style and mass produce them. And that's fine with the, you know, drop in gross revenue.
Yeah.
But you can't do it with the other tests. That's why I think so many firms are avoiding it. But they're really hurting people if they don't tell them, hey, there's another way you might qualify.
So if you think you qualify, Steve Moskowitz is the one to call, is the one to check with, because he'll get it straight. He'll do all the tests and the calculations and figure it out for you. 888-TAX-DEAL, MoskowitzLLP.com, MoskowitzLLP.com. Thank you, Steve Moskowitz. Thanks, love you. Nice to have you here. Right, see you soon. Bye. That is Steve Moskowitz, everybody. We are back with Maureen Langan, and I have my friend Jeff Machado waiting in the wings. So I see you there, Jeff. We'll bring you on in just a minute. But I wanted to show you some footage, Maureen. How did you fare in all these storms? Let me show you the Lexington Reservoir. Or area. What's it look like where you're living?
Well, you know, I live in New York City, but I've been out here for the month of January in Marin. And wow, I mean, the water going up in the, what the hell is it called? The lagoon is insane. Yeah. How about by you?
In the North Bay, I'm also in the North Bay, a little further up Highway 101 and the Petaluma River, which is actually a tidal slough. You drive over it and it definitely looks like it is at capacity, and a lot of kind of localized flooding, but we've been okay. My sister's fence blew down was about the gist of it, but there's been a lot of trees falling. You know, the warnings are that we're not out of the woods because the soil's so wet, so things could still happen. But
well, I love that I picked the month of January to be out here going, oh, it'll be welcome. Nice. The weather will be great. But you folks need it, right? You need it out here.
Oh yeah, we really need it. We really need it. Well, I'm glad to have you here, Maureen Langan. Thank you for being on the show. I hope you'll come back because I just love you and miss seeing you at KGO all the time.
Well, you know what it is, Kim? I do wish everybody well because it has just been awful for all of you. And it's such a, it's, you know, you lament, you grieve, but so many great people I met there and you are like at the top of the list. Oh, so just take good care of yourself. Oh, I love you. And I love following your beautiful children. Oh my God, they're so gorgeous. So people will follow me at Maureen Langan on all the social media, L-A-N-G-A-N. I'd appreciate it. And I'm going to email you something. So please, I got to talk to you. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Maureen Langan, everybody. Thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it. I am going to bring in a man that is just dear to my heart. A very good friend. I worked with Jeff Machado at Quad 106.5 in Sacramento, where he and his partner Sean gave me my start in radio. And then I also worked with Jeff for a while at 100.5 The Zone. Jeff Machado, welcome to the Nicky Maduro Show. Hi.
Keep talking. I love the adoration.
You are the best guy. I miss seeing you all the time as well, but I know you're doing great in the Sacramento area.
And I've proven what a good friend I am to you by not getting in touch with you in what, 10 years now?
Nah, you know, it's that's what Facebook's for. That's the way life goes, right? But so you stayed in radio for quite a while until what? I want to say 7 years ago, maybe ish.
Till 08. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So quite a bit longer than that.
Okay. And so now you're kind of doing, when I look at what you're doing, I think here's a guy who's following his dreams, following his passion. So when Nikki, whose daughter is, by the way, is in the hospital, she suffers from Crohn's disease. She's 13. Yeah. So that's what's happening there. Nikki may pop in and check, but she's got this segment called Why You Do What You Do. And it's about people who find passion and, you know, reason to go out and do these things that that bring them such joy. I immediately thought of you because you're doing something that you're meant to do and that you've always kind of wanted to do, and you're making a go of it. So tell me why you decided voice acting was for you.
Because I want people to pay attention to me.
Oh, is that why?
You know this about me. I'm a lifelong performer. That will not come as a surprise to you. Virtually everything I've done professionally has been performative in some way or another. So there's just something about having people look at me and or listen to me that I really dig. But above and beyond that, it was a really fun way to take all the sort of weird grab bag job experience that I had gotten over my lifetime and consolidate it into one position, which I figured, you know, if I had the opportunity, I should grab it. And it was a good choice.
How is voice acting different than radio? Because it's still talking into a microphone. It's still communicating with people in a certain way. But did you find that you didn't need any extra skills? Because I think everyone thinks, oh, I could do that. I could voice acting. I could voice those commercials. I could just, you know, if you could talk, you can do it. But I tend to think there might be a little more to the story.
Right. Well, the first big perk, no program directors.
Oh, that's good.
It's a great way to, you know, take the skills that I got in radio and sort of twist it and apply it in a different way. Also, a lot of it was applicable to stuff I did in radio because, as you know, from the 50 million hats they generally like you to wear when you're in radio, I did a lot of production when I was in radio, and I learned how to use the software, and I learned how to write a 60-second commercial and all that stuff. So I kind of had the skill set in place to make that transition sort of seamlessly. The big drawback to people in radio going into voiceover is that you sound like you're still on the radio, which like you said, a lot of people go into voice work saying, well, I could talk for a living. Sure.
Right.
But you have to talk in a very specific way. And like a disc jockey, I found out the hard way is not that way.
No,
it's wild how much training it takes for you to talk naturally, to not performative, or like you're reading something off a script. I'm still not there, and I've been doing this like 7 years now.
Yeah.
It's surprising how hard you have to work to sound like you're not working.
So I think that's when you get really good in radio, when you get to the point where when you crack the microphone, you're exactly the same on the air as you are off. You say the same stupid stuff, you make the same verbal mistakes, because then you sound like a real person. And I don't know if that's what you're talking about as far as voice acting, but that's how I always found radio to be. Like when there's no butterflies, when the microphone goes on, it's the same as if it was off in the room.
Yep. That's very true. And I'm sure you know this from your morning show experience too. It definitely helps to have other people around you
who
sort of think in the same groove that you do and are there just to be some kind of a moral support. That makes a big difference, and it makes it much easier to speak conversationally when you're, hey, actually having a conversation with another live human.
Yeah.
You don't really have that benefit in voice acting. It's just you alone in the booth. So you sort of have to imagine the people that I used to work with and I don't see anymore.
Are you feeling, are you feeling joy? Does your work bring you joy?
Oh, it brings me an insane amount of joy. I mean, not that it doesn't have moments of frustration too, but the joy is like, it's off the charts. Radio, I would be hard pressed to say which one was more fun, doing a morning show or doing this. You get to make goofy voices for a living.
Yeah.
Who gets to do that? It's awesome.
One of the things that you mentioned, goofy voices, I kind of want to make you do a goofy voice, but I don't want to put you on the spot either.
No, that's fine. And you know what? The funny thing about it is goofy voices are maybe like 2% of what I do.
Okay.
The vast majority of the work I do is just this boring, well, relatively speaking, boring. I think boring for people who imagine what a career in voice acting is, like it's nothing but nonstop animation and, you know, video games. No, it's corporate videos and e-learning modules for the most part. But every once in a while you get to do a fun character. So it kind of refuels you.
Do you feel like, I feel like, I love what I do, and I find joy in this conversation and having conversations with people and sharing that and letting people comment and kind of having a whole community conversation, which is what the radio station I worked for used to do, be the kind of the community town center. And that brings me great joy. But it's also something, even though we're trying to continue it, that might not bring you great money. And so, I just wonder what's the juxtaposition between money and being able to do what you love in your mind?
What? Like for me specifically or in general?
Yeah, in general, or your thoughts on the matter.
If you can do it, great. That's the big if going into something like, any creative freelance gig for sure. But, speaking from my personal experience, voice acting, it's very easy to seduce yourself into thinking that you're making a lot of progress by buying gear. I got my microphone and I got my booth built and I've taken my classes and I've got my demo produced and it's like, I'm ready to go. But that's only, being ready for the work is not the same as getting the work. And that's a whole different skill set from the performative stuff that I really enjoy doing. So it's a big question mark as to whether or not you can actually generate the income to do that thing you want to do. I think I'm a shameless advocate for going for it.
Yep.
I'm probably really privileged, and it's very easy for me to say that because it worked out for me.
Right.
And I'm sure a lot of people struggle with it a lot all the time, but that's one of those things, like I heard the conversation earlier about looking back on your deathbed and thinking, what is it that I'm going to regret? Mm-hmm. I would never want to regret that I didn't pursue my passion, at least to some degree. And yeah. So, you know, come what may, whether it works out or not, at least I can say, hey, I went for it.
There are some people that look at a job as just a job, just a paycheck. You know, they're good at it. They go in there, they write the software or they whatever, they get the job done, but they don't love it. You know, they don't, it's not their passion. It's not what drives them.
Sure, so been there.
To be able, yeah, well, I mean, most of us have, but to be right? able to do what drives you is very lucky. And so to be able to make it work is, I don't know, I'm still kind of hoping I'm able to make it work on my end, but I'm so glad to see that you are.
Boy, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. It's, you know, I make jokes about, you know, ooh, people get to stare at me and people get to listen to me. And yeah, that's yeah. kind of fun. But the sense of accomplishment you get when it works, not just for doing that thing that you're passionate about, but all the related stuff, that all the different hats that you have to learn how to put on in order to make that passion part of the formula work, you know, from learning accounting software to learning marketing to learning branding to all this stuff that I had no experience in whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You start to build up all those skills. It's a great sense of accomplishment, and it's a great skill set to have for whatever happens down the road too.
And so you've also picked up another passion, which is performing on stage as well.
Oh, and thank so, you know, I thought you were going to bring up that one. I told you not to talk. Oh, about.
Yeah, no, we're going to that one. We just keep that one under the rug. We just sweep it right under there.
Thank you.
So, you're back on stage. You're performing in musicals and shows. Mm-hmm. This is not a skill that I knew you had, and I am impressed. No, this is awesome. So what did you, have you always performed in shows? I mean, were you in like the high school musicals and all that, or how did you know that this was for you?
I didn't, but it seemed fun and I had the opportunity. Well, voice acting, another aspect of it that people don't really think about when they're on the outside of it is that the word acting is in there for a very important reason. And that is, you got to be able to act, especially for the higher level stuff. If you want to do any character work, the acting skills definitely help. And I had never taken an acting class in my life. So I went to take a class from this guy in Sacramento and I just got hooked on it. And little by little, I got pulled into the world of theater. And it's, you know, it's like The Godfather. Once you're in, you don't get out.
JR says something really funny. I'm fairly certain that at Jeffrey Machado is the voice in our company's sexual harassment training video.
That may very well be the case.
That's really funny. Yeah. Jeff talking to you about sexual harassment. If you knew Jeff, like I knew Jeff, that'd be really funny.
Well, with all my years of experience sexually harassing people, I figured I was the ideal person. Funny.
Flo says, Jeff, I love your passion and perspective. Would love to see you on stage. So that's
thank you. Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. You might want to like see a preview on YouTube or something before you rush to that decision. But yeah, I'm having fun. And the theater I'm at in Roseville, they do a lot of children's shows, which we're doing right now. We're doing one for field trip shows in the morning. And this is a big theater. It's like one of those old style movie houses that got converted. So it's like a 550 seat theater and it's packed with 7-year olds. And if you ever get the chance to do a live stage show in front of 550 screaming 7-year olds, I highly recommend it. It's better than the best caffeine ever.
It's like being a Disney cast member.
Oh, it's crazy. It's great. But even better because you get to be you. You don't have to wear a mask. You can just be yourself and make them laugh. And it's a very good audience to play for.
So my daughter is very involved in musical theater. It's funny, I would say theater, but the plays come around, like Our Town came around. She didn't want to do that. She says, if it doesn't have singing, I'm not interested.
Right? Okay. Yeah, Our Town doesn't have anything, right? It doesn't even have a set. It's just a play.
It's not a musical.
There.
Yeah. Right. So the local community theater in Petaluma every summer does a 1-month-long summer camp. And this year's play, they just sent it out just a few minutes ago, actually, is Rock of Ages. So we'll see if she's interested in that. Ooh. I don't know. They say it has a lot of 80s music in it.
I was going to say, is this like rock of ages?
I don't know. I'm not sure. We'll see. I don't know what the story is. I don't know. I just
I would love to see her do hair metal. That would be great.
Oh, yeah, she could probably pull it off. She's got that big voice. What's next for you as far as stage?
Oh, geez. Yeah, I'm going to try and make it through this one. And then we have Something Rotten coming up in a couple of months that I'm going to audition for. So fingers crossed for that one.
Do you have to kind of learn how to audition for stage just like you had to for voice? Or is it something that they just say, all right, sing and dance and show us your personality and boom, you're done?
See, that's the trap I fell into when I first tried to do it, because I figured, you know, it's all going to be about singing and acting. And I completely forgot about the dance component of it.
Oh.
What I didn't realize is that if you don't pass, at least for our theater, if you don't pass the dance part of the audition, you don't even get to do the acting part of the audition. Oh. They just show you to the door. And I didn't even bring like a pair of sneakers or sweats. I figured, dance, whatever. It's a couple of dance steps. I saw Saturday Night Fever. I can do this. No. They worked me like a dog. I fell on my face so hard. I probably left a dent in the stage. It was seriously embarrassing, but a good learning experience, because the next time I was kind of prepared. So
have you had to go take a dance class?
I would love to take a dance class, but it's try to be a 55-year-old guy and find an introduction to theater dance class. Not the easiest thing in the world.
You there's and a bunch of 8-year-old girls. Yeah.
Right. There's something oogie about 55-year-old guys who want to do that just like, no, I don't want to teach you. Get away from me.
Maybe not so much. Oh, I'm being told to watch the movie Rock of Ages, that it's actually pretty good. All right. Flo, I have to tell you, is a drama teacher in the South Bay, says there's nothing like the joy of performing. I feel every actor needs this, whether you're in it or directing a youth show.
Mm, yeah. I agree wholeheartedly.
They always say when my daughter is performing at the beginning of every show, they say a special thank you to parents and family members for making theater an important part of your child's life.
Oh God. Yeah.
And I don't know if many people realize how important that can be to your life.
Absolutely. These are like really dedicated sports parents. Like there'll be times when I have to go to the theater for rehearsal and it's right after rehearsal for the kids segment. And it's nothing but parents waiting outside the stage door. They're lined up like 2, 3, 4 deep. Everybody's got the cars waiting out there. If it's pouring rain, they're standing out there waiting for their kids to come out the back door. Every day I see them out here. It's super, super dedication. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a time commitment, but when I think your child finds something that brings them that same joy that you're talking about, that somehow people feel like they're that passion, they have to give it up for the real world and the real work someday, when they're able to, like you, continue it. I just think that's so awesome.
Murphy writes,
even though I'm a singer, it was my time step tap that got me my first cruise ship job in my 20s.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I have nothing but respect for parents who put in that kind of dedication. Unfortunately, I never had to prove it myself, because as it turned out, my son's passion was smashing old radios with a hammer. So
that's
something he could just do in the garage. I didn't even have to commute.
That's pretty funny. So speaking of your son, what's going on with your family? How's everybody?
Everybody's great. My son's working his tail off at the CVS around the corner. And word is, he's in line for management.
Okay.
So, employee discount.
There you go.
And my wife, Lisa, is still counseling middle school. She's loving it. Okay. Everything's going great. You know, our backyard kind of sort of flooded a couple days ago. But other than that, that's sort of a happy problem to have considering the last few years we've had. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you about the storm damage there. So I don't know if you said just the yard flooded. Have you had any other issues in your area?
Nah. No? It's sort of a newer development, so the trees haven't gotten big enough to blow over yet, which is a good thing. But yeah, I'm just happy to look out and see rain.
So what if people were listening to the radio or watching a commercial, what's the thing that they might be able to spot you on, other than the sexual harassment video at work?
Nothing. And I say that with all humility, nothing. You will, maybe an oddball audiobook here and there that you might purchase, you might stumble across my voice, but I have done nothing national yet.
Okay, well, that's okay.
But that's fine. There's always the next level to shoot for.
That is absolutely true. And I feel like it doesn't matter what level, as long as you are making it work and you're bringing yourself happiness and, you know, your family's able to have shelter, you're all good to go.
Absolutely. And it speaks to the amount of opportunity available in voice acting that I can still be working enough to be busy every day. And you have no idea that I'm around. Like, you haven't seen me in anything. There's so much stuff going on out there. There are so many opportunities. It's crazy.
Oh, I know you're around.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I love you, Jeff Machado. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Kim. I love you too. It's so good to see you.
It's really good to see you. Someday I'd like to have you and Sean together, kind of get the band back together and just chit-chat for a while.
That would be fantastic. Yeah, Sean, boy, that guy's busy building sets for major Hollywood productions now. So I don't know, you may have to pencil something in with his secretary.
We had him on talking about Halloween and scaring the crap out of people.
Which
so
is
I've
point.
Had him on once and you on once, but now I need to get you guys together. So that's
it ain't next. Halloween till a little kid cries.
Exactly right. Jeff Machado, thank you for being on the Nicky Maduro Show, and I hope you'll come back someday.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Jeff Machado, proof that you can do what you love. You can make it work. You can still find that thing that brings you the most joy in the world and actually make it happen for yourself. I'm very inspired by Jeff and what he's managed to do of performing on stage, something he's always wanted to do. And then here he is in his 50s and getting up on stage and making it happen. A lot of people have been performing for years and years, and he just knew it was always something he wanted to do and got up there and did it. And voice acting, you know, really not necessarily the next logical step after radio. It's a completely different type of job, even though it does involve speaking into a microphone. And trying to figure out where those jobs are and making it work. And he has managed to do that. So why you do what you do here on the Nicky Maduro Show are, again, thanks to Jeff Machado for coming on the show and talking about that. There is a trial starting today in San Francisco over Elon Musk's tweet. Remember this in 2018 where Elon Musk said he had put together $72 billion in a deal for a company buyout of Tesla. And Twitter went wild, but the buyout never happened. So now Elon Musk will have to explain himself under oath. And that is thanks to a class action lawsuit brought by investors. The tweet led to a $40 million settlement with the SEC and to Musk stepping down as the chairman of Tesla. So, he's just one problem after another for Elon Musk. And you know what I think it is? His mouth. His big mouth and ego gets him in trouble every single time. Like, just even if you're thinking about doing it, don't say it. Don't blab about it. You know, just logically think, is this reasonable? Put together a business deal, do what you're going to do, and then announce it when it's time to announce it. It's that big mouth and that ego talking about, you know, here's what I'm going to do, that always seems to get him in trouble. Okay, so I showed you the video, I'm going to show it to you again, of the Lexington Reservoir, which was very, very high. And here's what it looks like. The Lexington Reservoir and South Bay Reservoirs spilling over from this constant rain and runoff as well. They're calling it a rare sight that is generating some excitement and bringing a lot of people out to watch all the water. Crowds gathered yesterday at the Lexington Reservoir, that's the reservoir near Los Gatos, to see that water just flowing out. The water district said it's releasing more than 3,200 gallons a second, enough to prevent the reservoir from flooding, but also keeping in mind the protection of the Los Gatos Creek Trail from being overwhelmed as well. Mudslides and falling trees near roads all over the area around the reservoir in Morgan Hill, where the storm has hit especially hard. So that's the Lexington Reservoir. We also saw, though, in Novato, a couple days ago, Highway 37 flooded. They're still trying to pump the water off. It's, I believe, still partially closed. We saw Highway 92 with a giant sinkhole and a rock slide as well. As a matter of fact, there was one driver yesterday that said they just passed through, and an hour later, they see pictures of this giant boulder tumbling down onto Highway 92. And it was one of those, like, I feel so lucky that, you know, in my life, I could have been delayed or I could have stopped at a store. I could have been passing right as that boulder was falling. And somehow I managed to get myself through there without damage. And then you turn around and you see what happened in the wake of your, you know, in your trail. And there's that giant boulder sitting in the middle of the road. So it is, it's pretty scary. President Biden. Oh, here's Nikki Maduro. I'm going to bring her right in, even though I'm going to tell her, talk the story. Hello, my friend.
Hello.
How are you?
I am good. I'm going to talk in a regular voice because yesterday my daughter said that I was yelling in the hospital room because I'm so used to doing this show at home. She's like, you're yelling. Stop it. I'm like, okay. Like, so I'm just going to try to talk
yelling?
In a normal voice. And she's over there, like, keep it down. She's going to go like that if I'm talking too loudly. But hi.
Well, you're not talking in a normal voice. You're talking in a hospital voice.
Yes, yeah, a hospital voice. Because these walls are very thin. I will tell you that, you know, she gets mad at me because I've been, like, eavesdropping on. Going a little stir crazy in here, Kim McAllister. Let me just tell you.
How's she doing?
She's doing really, really well. The update, of course, and I know that you know this because I was talking, texting you yesterday, is that we're keeping our fingers crossed that we can get out of here on Thursday. She'll have the weekend and hopefully Monday and Tuesday to kind of get herself in the right mind frame. And then it's looking like we will be doing surgery next week. She seems to be handling it really well. So I will as well. You know, it's big, but the hope is that on the other side of it, she could just go back to being a kid, which is like the most important thing. Yeah. Eating food, because she hasn't eaten any food since last Tuesday night.
Oh God. Because that's because they're feeding her intravenously.
Yeah, so it's all liquid. She has had a couple boosts. She gets to have one boost a day, which is like a supplement drink. So she's doing that. And but she, I think as we get closer to hopefully going home, her spirits are up. We just need to get the hell out of here. It's been a lot. So, yeah, so that's the update. And I really, again, just appreciate everybody, you know, kind of reaching out and still tuning in to you. You're doing an amazing job.
He stalled out. Hopefully she'll pop back in. Yeah. So that's Nikki Maduro. And hopefully she'll rejoin us in just a moment.
Oh, am I back? I hope I'm back.
You stalled for just a second. Are you there?
Yeah, I figured. Yeah. Do you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, good. Yeah, I figured the hospital Wi-Fi, I'm like tapping it. I don't do very well.
So some donations to go over while you're here with us.
Oh,
of course. Our amazing Andreas Masuris with $10 to the Nikki Maduro Show, which we're so grateful for because, again, this is our only income. So, and we're trying to, as we were talking about earlier with Jeff Machado was on the show, with about doing things that bring you joy and wanting to keep doing things that make you happy. Exactly. Your help is the way we're going to be able to do that. Andreas with another $10. He says, I'm doing
great
a great job.
You are doing a great job, Kim. Good job.
You're so nice. The Lady Beatrice with $4.99. Maureen, we had Maureen Langan on the show earlier.
That's right. That's awesome. Yeah.
And she wanted to ask how you and your daughter are doing. How are you holding up?
You know, it's been a lot. But I'm holding down the fort. It's a lot. I'm tired of being here just like she is. But we're doing it together and it's a lot of bonding. It's something that we're going through, but I'm not going through it. She is going through it. I know. But yeah, I just want to get home just as badly as she does. So I think that once we have a break from this place, I'll be doing a little bit better. So
I was talking to Julie. Well, Julie and I are thinking a lot about you guys. I have a 13-year-old daughter as well, Nikki and I both. And so we were talking about what you and Marley are going through. And she said, if I was in the hospital, I would make you leave. And I was like, what?
You know, she says
I couldn't
now.
Be around you for all that. I would need my own space for a minute. Yeah. And I thought how different that I go. I think it's different when you're there,
exactly.
You know, and you're scared and you need your person with you. I don't know.
Well, you just never know when people are going to come in. And that's why I had to leave abruptly yesterday. Like, you don't know, like there could be a whole team of doctors just walking in. It's not like give you a heads up or, you know, we're going to necessarily through. And so it can be a little intimidating as a 13-year-old to just sit there. I'm going to tell you, Kim, and you know my daughter, she has just been so great of asking questions if she doesn't understand something. And so it's been really, that's been a cool thing to see. So, yeah.
I love it. Andreas, for another $10, he said, go Maureen. So, really kind. Thank you for your support. If you would like to contribute to the Nikki Maduro Show, there are ways that you are able to do it. You can go to the website, thenikkimadurashow.com. Trying to get to the banner. I'm not as good as doing it, all this stuff on the fly as you. You can go to thenikkimaduroshow.com and click on the Patreon. There it is. You can also PayPal, and there is Nikki's PayPal address. And of course, as Andreas has done and the Lady Beatrice, you can go ahead and do the super chat. It is live. And I thank everyone for all the help and for donating, and it means the world to us, honestly. Yeah, it really, and I think does. I just saw another one come through. Thank you, Jim Slayton. Hi, Nikki. Aww. He says,
"Hi, Jim."
I'll throw a couple stories at you if you have time.
Let's do this.
Okay. So I was just in the middle of talking about President Biden traveling to parts of the Central Coast. He's coming to the Central Coast on Thursday, visiting with first responders, officials, communities, and plans to assess how much federal support will be needed to provide relief after all this flooding. But I just found this picture. I'll try to share the screen. I was talking about this man who was driving. Highway 92. It was Highway 1 through the Devil Slide area. And he had passed it an hour prior and then looked back, you know, at pictures of the people had posted, and realized that he was pretty close to have traveled through this area right when this massive rock slide hit. If you see the landslide, it's crazy. Let's see if I can and show it to you. Here it is. Is what it looks like. Look at that boulder. You see that boulder?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's humongous. It landed right in the middle of the roadway there. And there it is.
They kind of got it.
That's what he's saying. It's like one of those, and it's so overused and cliche, the whole lucky to be alive thing. Yeah. But you know, really, it's one of those things where you're delayed for an hour, you decide to stop off for gas and pick something up for dinner, and boom, there you are in the middle of it with the boulder on your car. So exactly. It's one of those things, like, thank God, there it is in the middle of the road. But thankfully, it didn't hurt anyone. So yeah, the road is damaged and things are a little different there. But
I saw a picture yesterday, and I don't know if you had mentioned it, of that. What was it, like a World War II bunker thing had fallen off?
Oh, Fort Funston.
And I was like, oh my God. And again, it's kind of like the boulder. I'm like, are we sure there's nobody underneath that thing? Because you never know when things just happen.
I'm telling you.
As far as I know, nobody was underneath it. But
absolute luck of the draw that here's the photo that this thing didn't come down on a person. This is at Fort Funston, and you know, San Francisco and even in the Marin Headlands is full of these old bunkers where, you know, they used to keep a lookout and whatever, and you know, defensive positions along our coastline. Well, there's a landslide. It used to be up at the top of the hill. Look where it is now. Boom. This giant piece of concrete just falling right down. A World War II structure 200 feet down a cliffside right onto Fort Funston Beach in San Francisco, a former battery bunker. It just slid right down the hill. There were beachcombers that said, we saw it, but it doesn't look like anybody actually got hurt by it. So thank goodness for that. But yeah, another one of those. Whew. You know?
Well, it just goes to show, I mean, how much damage and land has been moved by all of this water and these storms. We have right outside our hospital room, like this kind of creek, and it was raging. I've lost track of my days. I think it was Saturday, and it was just completely raging. And one of my daughter's nurses actually lives in Felton. And so she was, which has been obviously hit hard with these mudslides.
Right.
And so I asked her, I'm like, oh my God, how's your community doing? And, you know, you always hear this from people, especially when it's in an area that's seen a lot of devastation. If their home is still intact and they're still there, they don't care that they've lost power because they know so many people have had it worse. And she was telling me on Saturday that, you know, a mudslide like had headed toward the fire station, and you feel for her because she's doing a great job and all the nurses have been amazing, but you could tell like part of your mind is never too far from what's happening in your community. Right. And my heart just goes out to all those people.
Will I be able to even get home today? You know, is the road going to be open?
It's crazy. It's so nuts.
Brian View giving us $4.99. Thank you, Brian. We appreciate it so much.
Awesome.
Lori writes, I kicked my parents out of my hospital room when I was 11. I had an appendectomy at 16, knee surgery. They made me nuts. My dad was a pediatrician, also an adult, had to ask them to leave. But my parents were very...
I don't know what that is.
I don't know what that is either. It looks like bread or peanuts. I'm not sure.
Maybe they were nuts.
My parents were nuts. Yeah.
No, my daughter is not, she does not want me to leave.
Yeah.
And of course it warms my heart. Of course I need to go get food. So I go down to the cafeteria, but no, it's, and I get it, you know, I totally do. It's a lot, but she loves being with me. And of course, you know, she's on her bed talking with her friends, you know, doing that whole thing. It's not like I'm up on her all the time, but we're in the same room, just chilling.
Nick is saying that he's keeping you and your daughter in his prayers. So.
Thank you, guys. I really
appreciate it. A lot of people thinking about you guys, and it's you know, it's not easy to see that you guys are having to go through this, and I wish it wasn't the case, but I feel like it is the case, and so all you can do is soldier forward and move on with the best plan. Mm-hmm. To have a healthy future for her. So,
well, yeah. And I mean, the thing is with this and anybody that either has Crohn's or knows somebody, you always have it. So even though she is going to have this surgery, she'll always still have it. And so it can always, you know, pop up, but hopefully, you know, for the foreseeable future, she could just get back to, you know, being concerned about things that you should be concerned about. She wants to do the play. She's going to get ready for high school. She wants to choose her classes with her friends. She's, you know, planning all these things. And now, you know, although I would love for my daughter not to go through surgery, of course, I don't want her to go through any of this. God, as long as everything goes well, she can just go back to being a kid, and I can just go back to dealing with a 13-year-old, almost 14-year-old. Her birthday is next month. So it's, we're looking forward to just being on the other side of this so much.
But I know, and when you told me she wanted to do the play, my first thought was, she knows what she needs.
Yes.
She needs to have something to look forward to, something to think about other than what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so I think she's in a pretty good headspace. That made me really happy when I heard that. Let's talk for a minute about White House documents. Do you have a moment?
Oh my God, what the hell, man? I mean, it's like when you go to the office and you're leaving and you forgot that you had all the office supplies in your bag or something. I'm like, why is this happening? Stop taking things that don't belong to you. I don't understand this, Biden. And now you know that the Trumpers are just like, see, it's not the same thing, but whatever.
It isn't, but there's some similarities. I think that President Biden didn't try to hide it. And that's the big difference.
Right.
That he's the one that said, you know, his counsel said, look, this happened and here it all is. And they're not trying to hold on to it or, you know, trying to shuffle it under the rug or anything else. But they're saying they were going to, the word was that they were going to release new information about it all today. Mm-hmm. And now the White House is saying they're not providing any new details about the classified document flap, where all the papers were found at the office and home of the president. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre is now referring reporters to the White House counsel's office as if they're going to talk to reporters, right?
Well, and the Department of Justice. I think that's a smart move because what is he going to say? You know, nothing that he says is going to help his case, right?
No.
Especially in light of, and of course, you know, even though these are classified, one of the articles I was reading, I think in the Washington Post, was it doesn't, at least at this point, rise to the level of the documents that former President Trump had. I do think that his response to it is way different than Trump's, right? Like Trump was kind of like, these are mine and I can declassify anything by just whispering into the air, right? So there's obviously this level of one, ownership of the mistake that was obviously made, and two, not trying to sweep it under the rug. Now you're saying they don't want to answer reporters' questions. That is the smartest thing to do. I mean, nobody in their right mind is saying, yes, please stand in front of the national media and answer any question that they throw at you. He's like, yeah, I've been doing this for decades. I know, just you talk to that person, I'm going to go back to being president of the United States.
If you've been following this story, this is a story of a woman named Anna. Mm-hmm. And she has been missing now for 3 weeks. I'm going to try to see if I can't show you her picture.
Okay.
Anna has been missing. She is 39. And they think her husband may have had something to do with it.
I was just reading about this. Didn't he just get arrested or something like that?
He did. The husband of missing Massachusetts mom. It's always the husband. The husband of missing Massachusetts mom, Anna Walsh, now facing murder charges in her disappearance. Still no body. Prosecutors say Brian Walsh, who already is being held, is now seeing his charges upgraded. He was initially arrested for lesser charges after police searched their home in Cohasset, southeast of Boston, where they allegedly found a bloody knife and cleaning supplies. This guy made all kinds of egregious errors. So we, again, still no body for Anna.
It's so sad. But he was Googling how to get rid of a body. Hey, dumbass. Right. Don't do that. Don't Google how to murder somebody.
Do you think they're not going to check the husband first? Do you think they're not going to look at your search history?
It's always the husband or the boyfriend. 90% of the time, it's somebody you know. I was reading, he's like, oh yeah, she just gave me a kiss goodbye and said she had to fly somewhere. And I don't know what happened to her. Yeah, buddy, they're going to be looking at you. They're going to look at your computer.
Oh, he stalled again. Yeah, they're going to look at everything. As a matter of fact, Courtney was saying that he was seen at a store with wearing a mask and buying cleaning supplies and bleach and all kinds of things. So, yeah, a lot of mistakes made in this situation. I don't know if Nikki's coming back to us or not.
Oh, yeah. Am I back?
There you are. Oh, yeah, I can see you. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, you stalled there for a second.
I know. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't have some goofy ass face on. But anyways.
You did actually for a minute, just for a hot second. But it's all right.
But yeah, the husband obviously did it. They're going to search the Google search. I mean, these are the things he should have Googled. What is the number one way of getting caught after you murder your wife? Because it just may have given him some tips of what not to do, honestly.
So we already talked about this story, but I want to hear your take on it.
Okay.
This is one of those stories I read where I think, oh, I got to hear what Nikki has to say about this. This is... San Francisco, the city of San Francisco, which has a different task force for reparations than the state of California.
Okay.
But the city of San Francisco's task force is suggesting that each eligible Black resident should get $5 million in reparations. It's something that would cost about probably $50 billion for the city of San Francisco, $50 billion with a B. Wow. The budget for next year is $14 billion. So this is a big chunk of change for San Francisco.
Yeah.
The San Francisco African American Reparations Advisories Committee said the lump sum would compensate for decades of harm experienced as a result of both intentional decisions and unintended harms perpetuated by city policy.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, these are only for the Black people eligible that live in San Francisco.
That's right.
I think that's going to be an S show of trying to figure out who qualifies for that. I mean... How do you decide? How long do they live in San Francisco? How far back does their lineage go? Does it go all the way back to the slave days, or is it simply because you're Black? It's I wouldn't want to be on that commission. That's all I'm going to say. That's a big chunk of change. I get it. I actually do support reparations, although I'm, obviously I don't have actual skin in the game. I feel like on one hand, direct checks are awesome. You can use the money as you see fit, but is that going to change society? Should we be investing in, programs, housing, grants, things like that to kind of help more people? I don't know. But yeah, that's a tough one.
Andreas makes the point. Why 5 million? Why not 10 million? What an arbitrary number that would be,
Right. Exactly. I mean, are the people that would benefit from it being asked what they want as reparations? Who's making that decision? How are they deciding?
You could make the argument that whether or not you're the descendants of slaves, you have still, if you are a person of color, been somewhat affected by maybe you're not being able to get a home loan. Maybe there was discrimination. Maybe someone didn't rent to you. Maybe you weren't hired. Maybe you didn't go to a good school. And so because of that, you didn't get a good education and you couldn't go to college. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why the economy has held people down.
Yeah.
And so you could make an argument for every African-American person in San Francisco that has experienced some type of economic hardship because of race relations, right? So I don't know how, like you said, I don't know how you pick and choose who gets the 5 mil and who doesn't.
Well, exactly. Now I understand if you can trace your lineage all the way back to the slave trade or what have you. Yes, you're like, okay, those people definitely deserve reparations. But to say that even if you can't, and again, record keeping all the way from back then until now, even if you don't, if the color of your skin, because of what's happened in our past, has held you, your family, and your own ancestors that you may or may not be able to trace back, I mean, isn't that the point, is trying to make right the consequence of, you know, our history? I don't think money's going to do it, you know? But again, I'm not the one that would benefit, nor, you know, should be the decider of that. And that's why, again, I'd say this is a tough one. I understand the desire to try to make things right, but if society still views you as other or less than, or right, your home appraises for $400,000 less, I was listening back to your interview with Brian Copeland. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's still happening, you could put all the money you want in my bank account, but if I step outside my front door and I'm still treated as less than, how do we fix that? Right. And that's what I would want the money to go towards.
And I don't think reparations are going to make any changes in our society and how we're still dealing with people. Then do we then circle back around in another 20 years and give more reparations because people are still economically disadvantaged?
Right.
I don't know. A lot of really good comments though. Lori says 5 mil is probably the cost of a house in San Francisco.
True. Yeah.
Nick writes that certainly there are more than 10,000 Black people in San Francisco. Imagine how those who are disqualified are going to feel.
That's a very good point. And you know, I would say, and again, I'm going to say this a million times, it's not as if I'm getting the money or the benefit, but if you can make home ownership, just as an example, easier for all Black people, okay? Let's just say, I don't know, either through a grant or interest rates or what have you, that can create generational wealth. That is something that, in my opinion, is much better than a direct check, because home ownership, like Nick was mentioning, that's the entry into being able to have real wealth, economic stability, financial stability. I would much rather see something like that happen. And I think you can do that for more people in San Francisco than you would be able to just giving them straight money.
Yeah. And Lori kind of agrees with you, writing systemic racism dating from slave and reconstruction days has affected generational wealth of Black families.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Chris writing, if money were dispersed, housing values would raise 40%.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's the market. So again, if you did something like zero interest home loans for Black families, for Black, you know, borrowers, something like that, that way it's, you know, more like the mortgage.
He froze again, but I will say Celeste is on your wavelength. She says very low interest rates for home and business loans, since consequences of slavery have lasted many generations.
There we go.
We could change that with great loans. So Celeste is thinking the way you're thinking.
Yeah, exactly. And and different things like that. College scholarships. You know what I mean? Yeah. Free college. Yeah. I mean, these are the things that, yes, they're not direct checks, and yes, somebody has to pay for it, but we should be paying for it, because for those of us that are not Black, that, you know, don't have that in our lineage, we don't understand what it's like to walk through this world for generations feeling that way. Yeah.
There's another story out that I just saw. It says a majority of Americans actually oppose reparations for descendants of slaves. This story, the study is from UMass Amherst, and it's a survey finding 63% of Americans do not support a federal policy that would provide descendants with the equivalent of 40 acres and a mule. It estimated that a reparations program would cost the federal government $12 trillion with a T dollars.
I wonder how many Black people were polled in that. I mean, so what if you don't like it? In all honesty, it doesn't surprise me at all that a lot of Americans don't, because a lot of Americans probably wouldn't benefit from it.
Right.
Tough cookies. You know what I mean? Like, I honestly, that doesn't mean anything to me.
You were
it's not
say
surprising.
Titty.
Tough cookies. I'm trying to watch my language. But no, I don't. It doesn't surprise me that people don't support it universally. We're not doing this as a popularity contest. We're doing this because it's the right thing to do, because we know that it was so wrong what has happened, you know? So.
Yeah, although I do like your thoughts about loans and about scholarships and about that way to kind of even the playing field.
Yes.
Because I, again, don't know if anything's going to change just because we write someone a check.
Exactly. You know, you have to get
We're still a racist society. We're still not, you know, we're still not there. So we can give you money, but we're still not making it equal. And that's what we want to strive for.
Mm-hmm. And at a time when people don't even want to talk about the history of this country when it comes to racism, all this pushback on just educating people about their history because it might make people feel guilty. Well, it should make you feel bad. It's not as if we're blaming you, but our history is dark. And so if there's already pushback on just educating people about it, you know, there's we're a long way from getting to a point where people are equal in everyone's eyes.
I'm glad I brought that story up again with you. I was feeling so much better after a discussion with you, Nikki Maduro.
Oh, I love our discussions.
Do I still have time with you, or you have to go?
Sure. No, I think we're good for a few more minutes. Hopefully my Wi-Fi keeps up.
So how ridiculous are people? There's a story that about the TSA, and they're saying they have stopped more than 6,500 firearms at airport checkpoints in 2022. 6,500 guns trying to go through airport security. I mean, if there's anywhere you think that they're going to take your gun away, it's at the airport security check line. Administrator David Pekoski credited an appropriations bill for the funding. He said paying employees fairly has helped its quality of operations. That's kind of perplexing. So what you're saying is more funding has led to better agents. They're trained more and there's maybe more of them. Well, what was happening before we did that?
Well, I mean, there's only, you know, and I subscribe to the belief that TSA is kind of like a show type of thing, because most of this stuff does not happen in the x-ray line. It's happening back there. They don't care about certain things that people think that they care about. Now, are these firearms that were in checked bags or carry-on bags?
People tried to bring it through security, so that had to be carry-on.
I mean, that's just the idiot test, right? It's just like, well, if you're
although
stupid
I guess
enough,
they test your check bags too, don't they?
I think you can bring a weapon, like an unloaded gun, with you.
I think you might have to declare it.
Something like that. I mean,
so these are the ones that no one declared. No one, like, they're caught.
They're done.
You busted. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but of course, you know, I shared the story about my husband and the knife, so it happens.
It does
sometimes
happen.
People just don't have the sense that God gave them, Kim McAllister. They just don't.
But we love them anyway. God love
exactly.
them.
Exactly. We do indeed.
Have you been following the story about the price of eggs?
Oh my God. So I have not been to the grocery store, obviously. Right. Are they gone? It's like, because from what I'm gathering, and I have not been out in the real world for like a week, the eggs are gone. There's no eggs.
Eggs are gone. There's a special egg store in San Jose.
Mm-hmm. I was reading about that.
Has all the eggs. They have all the eggs there. You got to go to the special egg store. We have a special egg store in Petaluma called Skippy's. The eggs are always at Skippy's, and they're like all locally sourced and organic, and they're like the good eggs. So that's where we all go. But apparently now the cost of margarine and butter, I don't know who uses margarine anymore. Do you use margarine?
No, I don't. No. I use butter. Butter's good.
Yeah. The cost of butter and margarine skyrocketing. Analysts say margarine has gone up 44% from a year ago. Wow. Ooh. Butter is not far behind at 31% from a year ago. Experts blame vegetable oil production disruptions caused by the war in Ukraine for the margarine price hikes, while a reduction in dairy farmers' herd sizes during the pandemic led to butter prices going up.
Yeah. And then obviously the bird flu is what's happening with the eggs, right? Mm-hmm. So I know all the people that have chickens in their backyard are just loving life right now. We're not a big egg family, but I can imagine like businesses, bakeries, you know, people that depend on eggs, now butter. I would say that this is kind of tough. Is there any date that they're giving on when this is going to be fixed?
I mean, I know
the bird flu is, they got to get that under control because they got to kill all those poor birds, but butter. Wow. And don't butter. Eat margarine. Don't eat margarine. It's bad for you. Don't do that.
People used to, though, when they thought margarine was a healthier alternative to butter. Mm-mm. But then it turns out it had all this polyunsaturated oil, whatnot in it. And it was worse for your heart than butter was. So why not just eat the real thing, but less of it?
Exactly. Less of it. If you can't pronounce the things on it, and butter is really just easy to just don't eat it. Don't eat it. It's not good for you. Not good at all.
Another story, Brittany Griner making her first public appearance since being released from Russian custody.
Really?
She showed up on Monday at the Martin Luther King Jr. Day parade in Phoenix, Arizona.
Really?
Of course, she was released in December after being taken into custody in Russia at a Moscow airport for a small amount of hashish oil found in her luggage. Speaking of things parked in luggage that's not supposed to be there. But yeah, so she's out and about, and she's talking about having other people being freed that are in Russian custody and using her platform for that type of thing.
Good. I mean, it's nice to hear from her. I was reading this one article when she was first released. I forget who it was, but they were talking about the fact that she should take time to be at home, because you can only imagine the PTSD the woman has being in a Russian prison, right? Yeah. So I'm glad that she seems to be okay in reaching out and, of course, you know, thinking of Paul Whelan and others that are still in prison in Russia, and that we hope to get back. But it's good to see that she's doing okay, I guess.
Another story that I maybe we'll end it because I know you're busy and doing things, but Lisa Marie Presley funeral arrangements being made, and they are going to do it on Sunday morning on the front lawn at Graceland. The public is invited, and people are being asked to visit graceland.com for more information. I guess she's going to be buried there next to her dad and her son.
I mean, you know, and of course, I'm not a huge Elvis Presley fan. I don't dislike him, but obviously I just don't know everything about him. Growing up, I was reading an article about her and all the grandkids. You know, she lost her son to suicide not too long ago. And, you know, just the burden of being a descendant of someone like Elvis Presley,
right?
You know, and then Billy Bush was giving interviews, because I guess he did the last interview with her where she did seem a little bit off, and she did have a heart attack, correct? I think that was,
she suffered cardiac arrest, and we don't exactly know why.
Okay.
You know, what brought that on. So,
right. You know, and obviously she's had a tougher life being in kind of that public eye, but being buried at Graceland, I think is, you know, a good move for her. I just, you know, and then my heart goes out to like Priscilla, and it's just, God, you look at some celebrities, right? You look at some icons and you think that, you know, wow, they have it made. And honestly, sometimes I just look at those people and it's like, I would not want that life for $1 billion because of all the pressure that it comes from. And honestly, a lot of tragedy as well. So
that's kind of how I think about Prince Harry too.
Yeah. You know,
Especially people that never asked for it, that were just born into it.
I mean, exactly.
Elvis, he wanted the fame, right? Or he wanted to be a musician. He put himself in that spotlight.
Yeah.
But his daughter never did.
No. And she found him. And I didn't know that she was the one that found him when he died, which is just also really tragic. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be quite the spectacle, I would assume, for her. What is it? I mean, is it a showing or where her body will be at Graceland? And then it's going to be another tourist attraction. It seems kind of gross when you think about it that way, but it is what it is, I guess.
I'm just sad. The whole situation is sad.
Yeah, it really is. And she was so young. She was so young.
Tahoe, big snow pack in Tahoe.
Oh my God, I know.
7.5 feet at the UC lab in the Sierra.
You couldn't pay me to go out there. It's too cold. I'm not a snowboarder or a skier, so why the hell would I want to be out there? I had some friends that went to Tahoe over the last long weekend. Their pictures, I mean, I know that maybe it's exciting for some people that like that, but I'm like, that looks miserable. It was a total whiteout. I'm like, no.
I feel very remiss, though, because we were looking at pictures of the snow. A friend had posted some on Facebook after their daughter went snowboarding. And my son looked at me, and he was like a toddler the last time we were in the snow.
Oh, really?
And he goes, it's been so long, Mom, I don't even remember snow. And I was like, oh, man. Oh, I mean, there was COVID in there for a couple of years. You know, I mean, I haven't taken him back up there. And I feel like such a bad mom because I haven't shown my 8-year-old snow.
Don't feel guilty. I sometimes feel that way too. Like, oh my God, my kids can't ski or snowboard that well. Yeah, well, whatever. I mean, there's people that never see the freaking ocean, Kim McAllister. You know, you can't feel guilty about everything. So
it's you know fine. What I wanted to ask you about is the 49ers game. Did you get a chance to watch in the hospital?
Did I get a chance? I was being yelled at by my daughter for screaming and yelling in the damn hospital room. Are you kidding me? Did I watch the game? Yes, I watched the game. It was the first half I was very nervous, obviously, but the second half was just absolutely amazing. It's the only football game I was actually able to watch, but I was hands down going to watch it.
Can we talk about that, what they're calling it a dirty play? I have to show the picture. I'm so glad I found it just now.
Okay.
But this is the picture of the leg pull
of Debo.
Yeah. And I this is what I wanted to ask you about. Why would a player do that? Like, you know, you're on the TV in front of millions of spectators and you do a crap move like that. What was he thinking? What was the reasoning?
Well, one, Debo just came back because he had an injury. So, you know, you can hurt him again. And he's an amazing player. Two, emotions get the worst of you. You know, I mean, we just had that game. I'm forgetting his name right now. Who was pushing the medical personnel that was tending to someone on the field. These football players' emotions get really high. Does that make that okay? Absolutely not. Nick Bosa's brother, Joey Bosa, he's thrown his helmet all around and got all kinds of penalties for the Chargers. And you know, many people are saying that's what cost them the game. These football players, in my opinion, just have so much emotion and passion. And when the game is on the line, they don't think clearly. That's obviously what happened. But you know, the moment that happened and Debo was saying it and other people, Kyle.
Oh no, she stalled again. Hold on, she'll come back. Can't wait to hear what she has to say. Nope.
Let's see if I can get there. There I am.
There she is again. I knew you were coming back.
I'm all going like this. I'm like, but anyway.
Just be patient. I'm going to be patient.
I'll be back. No, but they were saying that this is what really fired up the Niners after the half. And I mean, they S'd the bed. The Seahawks just totally lost that game in the second half. It was awesome. It was amazing. I love my team. The Cowboys, again, the next weekend is going to be nuts. So, and hopefully I will be home to watch that game. So I'm very, very excited.
I wonder what happens. Oh, Lori says fine. I wonder what happens to a player like that. You know what? Does he?
Yeah. So he was flagged and he might get fined. He might.
It looked
after
like
the game.
He intentionally tried to injure Debo Samuels.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm outraged by, I'm not even a football fan and I was outraged by that. I didn't try to hurt somebody like that.
I mean, obviously,
what did your mother teach you?
You haven't heard of Bounty Gate or anything like that. I mean, this sport has a history of stuff like that. But yeah, it's and especially against Debo. I mean, you don't want to get the Niner fan base all pissed off about it. So, but yeah, it was definitely a dirty move. Speaking of dirty moves, I mean, Tom Brady was being accused of doing a dirty move during their loss, which, you know, a losing season and then, you know, ending the season like that. But it's nothing new in the NFL. That's for sure.
It's a sad situation. You get a lot of messages, a lot of prayers for your daughter for you. Elizabeth is saying that. Kim Morton says, Nikki, please take care of yourself. We saw that weird little bed you're sleeping on with your pillow cube. We know what's up.
There it is. Where is it? There's my little.
The home of Nikki Maduro.
I'm telling you, that pillow is saving my ass. I'm telling you.
But you know what? I mean, I feel like you are doing this thing in the hospital where you're bonding with each other. And so it's not, you know, you're not there for a good reason, although she's getting better. And so that's good. But I feel like in situations like this, I'm always looking for that silver lining.
Exactly.
And in this lining, the last few days that you guys have spent together, you never would have had this opportunity to be this close and to make these moments that you're having.
Exactly. So. I told her the same thing. I'm like, this is just a bunch of memories that we're going to be having. Now, of course, we would love it if we were, you know, traveling Europe or something a little more fun. But this is where it has to be. And this is where it has to be. So there you go.
There's more storm damage. And I don't know if you saw these houses that were red tagged in Berkeley.
Hmm.
Here's one of them.
These poor people, I swear.
This is at least one home in Berkeley. Land just came right on down and slid right into their house.
That is so frightening. I mean, when mudslides happen like that, and they just take out everything. Look at that.
There's another one. Yeah, awful. Wow. So five homes evacuated, more than one red tagged in this situation. I just think, you know, we have shelter. There's a lot of good things going on in our lives. So I know that I bring it up because I know you have challenges right now. And so do those people. You're not alone in facing hardships and figuring it out. But,
and it's true. You're absolutely correct. I mean, I always try to keep things in perspective. And again, you know, the one thing that got me through, and I've told you this many times, when my daughter was first diagnosed and doctor's appointments and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. The number one thing I always say is, thank God I have health insurance. Thank God my husband is working. You know, thank God my husband's able to work and I'm able to stay here. Right. All of these things, while I don't want to be her going through this, are blessings. And we can't lose sight of that because there are so many people that just don't have it. And so, yes, I am counting my lucky stars, but I'm going to be taking care of myself. My daughter will as well. Again, she has surgery next week. So I might be off for a little more after that, but then hopefully that'll be it for a while. And we're really excited to get there. So,
well, hopefully we'll be able to get you back on the show as it permits with whatever going on in the room there. This is perfect. I think this is great. I just love just having the conversation and throwing stories at you.
Me too. It's so nice to be this direction, Kim. So you just keep throwing things at me and I absolutely love it. It's awesome. We could just do this all the time. It's great.
Absolutely. We could do this all day long. Nikki Maduro, we love you. We're thinking about you.
Thanks.
I want to, as we end out the show, I would like to thank our founding sponsor, which is Steve Moskowitz, who has been amazing through everything. He's at 888 Tax Deal. He's at MoskowitzLLP.com.
Hold on. It's MoskowitzLLP.com.
So if you need a tax attorney, if you have occasion to have a tax question, Steve Moskowitz is the one to call. Before you go, click the like button. We need it. We love it. It makes YouTube happy and lets them know that people are watching us and helps us stick around. And you can always support the show, not only by going on to the Super Chat, but also by going to thenickimadoroshow.com and finding our Patreon there. We also have the PayPal address up and running at thenickimadoroshow@gmail.com is the way you do that. So my thanks to everyone for being here. I know Nikki hasn't been here the whole show, so thank you for putting up with me in her absence. And
you are rocking it. Appreciate it. You know it. You're going to take my job. There you go.
No, not even a little bit, sister. I need you. Thank you to Maureen Langan for being here, who is amazing. And thank you to Jeff Machado for coming in and talking about how you do and why you do what you do. So I'll see if I can't close it out with the way Nikki always closes it out.
With the best Jacob. Boy ever. Yes.
My little sweetheart. Bye, go. Nikki. I love you. Kisses to Marley.
Nikki, you're also awesome. You're sprout. Like a beautiful blossom. You're also the best. I really can't rest. You're all so awesome.
Wow. Okay.